Welcome to the Building Better Futures for Health series. I'm your host, Richard Sokolov. I'm the co-founder and executive director of IDE Group. In this series, we'll be speaking to former contestants, winners, and judges of the Building Better Futures for Health competition. On today's podcast, we're welcoming Sam Van Bowman. Sam's a neuroscientist and founder and CEO of Neuroflux. Neuroflux is a company commercializing the development of a portable wireless device for continuous long-term monitoring of brain activity and blood flow for use in non-invasively and quickly detecting strokes. That's a mouthful, and Sam's going to explain a little bit more for us as we go through his podcast. Sam, welcome.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a, let's call it cursed podcast, because it took us a few times to get this going, a few illnesses and complications in getting us together, but we're here, which is fantastic. Thank you for joining us on this wet Monday morning. I guess where I'd like to kick off is for people, the listeners and the viewers, to know you a little bit. So can you tell me a little bit about yourself? Yeah, sure. Where you came from and what you're doing now?
Sure. So yeah, my name's Sam. I'm currently the co-founder and CEO of Neuroflux, but initially my background is I have an honours degree in neuroscience from the University of Otago in New Zealand. Then I moved over to Australia to pursue biomedical engineering, and where I'm currently doing a PhD in biomedical engineering at the University of Sydney, where we've developed a novel technology to continuously monitor changes in brain blood flow, and that led to a patent and then to the startup company Neuroflux. And yeah, Neuroflux is trying to commercialize this research.
So what drew you to biomedical engineering and specifically neuroscience? I mean, it's quite specific what you're doing. So I'm trying to sort of get a sense into what's the attraction there. What got you here?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a good passion for science, and I find it very fascinating. And that is why I chose neuroscience as my undergrad degree. I thought it was the most interesting area of science, so I chose to pursue that. And then I wanted to make my passion for science practical and tangible as a career opportunity. And I wasn't really sure what to do for a year or so. And then biomedical engineering came across my radar, and I thought it was a very exciting opportunity. You know, it's a very growing industry with lots of exciting applications happening all over the world. So I moved to Sydney and dove headfirst into this PhD, which is obviously neuroscience related. We're trying to develop a device to improve stroke patient outcomes.
Yeah, so that's led you to Neuroflux, which is sort of how we've crossed paths. Mm-hmm. And just tell us a little bit about the genesis of that. So, I mean, biomedical engineering is quite broad in its application and what we can do and what we do as well in the field. Why stroke? What started this path down this particular device that you're trying to commercialize now?
Yeah, sure. So beginning of my PhD, one of my supervisors, one of his family members had suffered multiple strokes in between CT scans in hospital. And he was quite alarmed that this had happened and was wondering why these strokes had not been detected. And at the same time, he had this novel idea. It was really a hypothesis at the time of how we could utilize electrical signals produced by the body to detect changes in brain blood flow. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved to Sydney, he said, here's a project for you to investigate, and this could have an application here. So that was the really journey about almost 4 years ago now. Wow. And my PhD initially was focused on kind of scoping out the literature review, of course, but then, you know, start implementing this hypothesis and testing it initially on myself, where we got some preliminary results that were really exciting, and that led to a provisional patent. And then, yeah, it really took it forward from there.
And when did you feel like you had something of value here? I mean, obviously there's lots of research that goes on, and research really important. Sometimes it doesn't lead to a commercial outcome and can become the building blocks of something else much further down the track. But you are now down this commercialization pathway with this. What was the moment where you thought, hang on, there's something here that I can commercialize and take? Because I think you talked about this passion for making things practical and actually making something actually provide therapy. Yeah. When did you know you had something there?
Yeah, I've had to pinpoint the exact time. I think, the initial testing on myself, it was exciting, and we thought we might have something, and then the provisional patent was filed. But I think the moment that we realized we may have something is we then conducted a volunteer study. We recruited 20 healthy volunteers to wear our device while they completed a number of tasks that induced changes in brain blood flow. And we also captured their brain blood flow with ultrasound, which is like the gold standard of short-term brain blood flow monitoring. And we saw a correlation between our device metrics and ultrasound. And I think that was really the first, you know, kind of spark that thought, you know, we probably might have something here, you know, with this cohort of volunteers, and really pushed me to, explore the commercialization potential of this technology.
Right. Right. Because it's quite a big problem. I mean, from what I understand through doing a bit of digging, you know, there's a stroke every 19 minutes in Australia. We're talking about a $6 billion problem, I guess. And obviously there's a lot of personal sort of tragedies and issues that go along with people dealing with stroke. How does your device and Neuroflux want to make a change there? Because obviously it's a very pervasive problem in society and in healthcare. How are you going to make a difference then? What are you trying to do with NeuroFlux?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. Stroke is the second leading cause of death worldwide, major cause of disability as well.
Mm.
You're right, stroke every 90 minutes in Australia. Actually, a stroke every 2 seconds worldwide. Wow. So it's a massive problem. And stroke, the most common type of stroke is ischemic stroke, which is caused by a big blood clot in the brain, a large reduction in brain blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
But currently, if you have a suspected stroke, you come into hospital where you'll have a CT scan to confirm the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't have another scan for up to 24 hours due to radiation exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And in this first 24 hours in particular, patients will receive treatment and now at risk of neurological deterioration, such as having a secondary stroke.
Mm-hmm.
But there's currently no way to continuously monitor brain activity and brain blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
So standard care relies upon waiting for the next CT scan, 24 hours time, and on nurses waking up patients to perform verbal neurological assessments, which is very time consuming for nurses, can be very distressing for patients to be woken up all the time. It's a subjective method, and if the patient's unconscious, it's ineffective. So what we're trying to do at NeuroFlux is commercialize our technology to provide a real-time continuous monitoring device of monitoring on brain activity and brain blood flow to monitor treatment outcome in these time periods and also detect secondary stroke leading to improved patient outcome.
Right. So it sounds like it's something that's a little bit more geared towards being more precise and less invasive for the patient once we're in treatment for their initial stroke, right? So this is something that could obviously reduce costs but also improve accuracy of capturing these secondary strokes.
That's right, because right now we're in these time periods between the scans, really reliant on the nurses, and they do a great job, but they're super overworked, and they could just miss something, different nurses ranking different patients, and it's a subjective method. So you're trying to provide an additional monitoring tool to just capture more data that can be used to provide better management of patients.
Mm-hmm. So you say you've been now on this journey for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
We crossed paths at Health 10X with the University of New South Wales Accelerator Program, which you got into and completed successfully. Where are you now on this journey? I mean, obviously the ultimate goal, I imagine, is to get a device out there and into use in hospitals and clinics. Where are you on your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. That is obviously the ultimate goal. When we met almost a year ago now, when I applied to that program, and that was really the first step to exploring the commercial potential of the technology and really learning all about startups and how to run a business and all that kind of stuff, which is really exciting. But since we met, I've brought a co-founder, Dr. David Cardoso is my co-founder now, number of advisors, strategic and clinical advisors. So the company has really formed quite a strong foundation in terms of the people at its early stage.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also currently running a clinical safety study testing our device on stroke patients out at Westmead Hospital. We've currently had 12 patients successfully wear the device for 9 hours with comfort scores of about 95%, which has been really exciting.
Mm.
We've also formed a strategic partnership with the Jules Institute for Global Health, who we met through the Health 10X program. With them, we're applying for a number of grants to support the next stage of clinical trial, the multi-center trial, to really assess the efficacy of the device.
Mm.
And we're also, as a company, currently raising our pre-seed fund to also fund a number of activities, including hardware, software development, IP, and regulatory costs.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So there's a lot going on there. And we spoke a little bit before we started here about you just joined the Remarkable Accelerator program as well.
That's right. So we're also participating in the Remarkable Disability Tech Accelerator, which has been another great experience. They've got a particular focus on providing better lives to people with disability.
Mm.
And where we come into, obviously our device, we're trying to reduce the chance of disability in stroke patients. So that's how we fit into that picture.
Yeah, it's interesting because we talked about it as well. It's not about assisting people with disabilities, but it's almost preventing people from getting a disability and actually preventing that outcome. So it's quite a unique way to look at that. I think that's amazing that you've got so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you were also the winner of the latest installment of the BBFH program, or Our Little Program. So congratulations on that. It was a bit odd because we did it during COVID and the lockdown. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was like going through our program, and what was your impression of the process? And can you take us through that?
Yeah, it was a great experience, and I think was helped a little bit because we'd just been through the 10X Accelerator program, so we were quite familiar with putting a pitch deck together and the application, so that helped a lot. But it was a good experience. We submitted an application, answered a number of questions, and then had the interview process, and then pitched in front of a group of judges. We got some really great questions and great feedback. And it was just great to, watch the videos previously recorded from the previous year. So I kind of had an understanding of what had come in the past. And it was exciting because it was, not just necessarily in Australia. I was based in the Netherlands as well in that previous year. So some really exciting companies that we're up against, and we're very privileged and fortunate to have won that competition.
You're quite impressive in what you pitched and your application. So I think it was a very good and very strong application, hence you won. So what do you expect to get out of it? So obviously we're starting to work a little bit together from your winning the program. What are you hoping to get out of it? Because you've got lots going on. Obviously we're doing some specific collaboration with you. What are you hoping to get out of the win?
Yeah, so what we're doing, our current device is kind of like a headband device with a few electrodes across the scalp and chest and a few ear clips as well. But the current device uses an open source piece of hardware from a company online called OpenBCI. And it's quite a, we've got a 3D printed enclosure that holds this piece of electronics on the side of our device. But it's quite bulky and we want to make this smaller, more lightweight, but also more customized to do what we want to do. So with the proceedings from BBFH, we're working with IDE Group now to develop a smaller, more customized PCB that's going to make the device kind of more streamlined and more lightweight to provide better comfort to patients.
Yeah, so we're trying to take that little up a notch and, and get a little bit more towards what it may be in the future. Is there anything that you've learned so far through that program that maybe you haven't to date that sort of you can share with some of the viewers and the listeners?
Yeah, I think it's been good working with you guys and just kind of learning about how that process is. I think, you know, just learning more about the industry and that kind of stuff. I think it's been tough, I think, and recently with COVID especially, there's been lots of like long lead times of getting pieces shipped from overseas and things like that. So having to learn kind of mitigation strategies and just kind of, you know, the how to work together to come up with the product that we want.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people don't understand, or maybe they do, but it's not commonly spoken about that. It's not just a sort of cookie cutter approach to development. It's basically you need to understand what's risky, tackle that first to try to, you know, conserve your funds so that we don't spend money in things that are not going to produce value. So we're always, I think part of the discussions that we had with you and David was to try to work out, okay, well, what's really important? Where do we need to put the funds and where do we need to put the effort to try to de-risk you and to get you a little bit closer to the goal as quickly as possible, right? I think people always think that, you know, there's this cookie cutter approach to development, but it's not really. It's all about risk, right?
That's right. That's right. And because, you know, as an early stage startup, we're working with quite a tight budget and, you know, things, if you're not careful, can quickly get blown out of the water. So you do have to really consider exactly what you want from the project. And I think that's, we're learning a lot and going down this journey as well.
Yeah,
about I think, how to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting because recently I was speaking to a few people. I'm talking about how fragile support is for startups, right? It's not like it's guaranteed. It's not like there's endless amount of attention or funds or resources. And I think some people maybe take that for granted and can run out of a bit of steam before they actually hit those important milestones where they actually have value to prove to get further funding or further support. So I think that's something, I guess, that people need to understand. You're doing something unique, which is obviously translating research, right? So you're coming out of academia, trying to commercialize it. And I guess it's a cliche maybe, but it is, I think, a truism where Australia does a lot of great research. I think we do punch above our weight quite heavily, but we're sort of not the best at times in translating, making that step into the commercial world. Can we talk a little bit about what are the biggest issues you've seen so far in your four-year journey into this translation space that maybe you can share with other academics maybe looking to do the same or doing the same that maybe they can learn a little bit from you?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, we do really great research here in Australia, but there is this translation gap between the research and then commercial outcomes. And that's a big bit of a problem here. I think a lot of people are trying to tackle and it's not an easy solution. You know, it varies across the different universities and different models and the different kind of schools and things like this. But I think, first of all, you need to be passionate and committed to doing something like that. You can't just, you know, think, oh, I might give it a go. You really just need to dive in and go for it. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. But I think we were quite fortunate to go through the Health 10X Accelerator program because that formed a great foundation and a great understanding of the ecosystem. But I think the most important thing is just the network of people, having greater support around you to rely on. Because as an early stage startup, you know, both myself and my co-founder David are first time founders. We haven't done this before, so it's a lot to learn, but having a great team around you is very important. So I think that's helped us a lot. I don't think, you know, people say it takes a village to raise a startup, and it's true. You can't, it's impossible to do it by yourself.
Yeah. Is there any particular thing that stands out so far that's been surprising and difficult and that you've had to sort of work to overcome, or how have you overcome it?
It's just the amount of work I had to do, you know. It's balancing the PhD plus the startup is quite challenging at times. Mm-hmm. I'm very fortunate that the PhD is so closely related to my startup that the research that I'm producing from my PhD is going to support the startup at the end of the day, which is awesome. But yeah, it's just a lot of work. Learning to deal with the stress, I think, is a big thing, but also learning to not stress about the little things. You know, you have to see bigger picture sometimes, and if you stress about every little thing, you're not going to get anywhere. So
yeah, working in research, you have to be detail oriented, but now you're trying to sort of let go of some of those.
Yes, that's another big thing I've had to learn as well. There's a shift in mindset between the academic researcher, where you're trying to prove every single little detail and be very thorough in everything you do. But then when you put your commercialization hat on, it's almost like just a change in the language or how you phrase things and how you have to present stuff, which was quite difficult at first, but I'm learning how to put the different hats on.
And how are you learning that? How are you sort of adapting? Is that just through going through it, or do you have any mentors that help you, or how does it work?
I think both. I think going through the accelerators, I've done a lot of pitching now, virtual and in person now, restrictions have been eased, and I think it's mostly just that language and just kind of living and breathing that commercialization experience, kind of, you know, you kind of live it into reality, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
And what sort of this commercialization journey, what's it made you focus on that you haven't focused on, you know, during your research? What is the sort of the inflection that commercialization puts on things when you're trying to get things to market?
So I think often researchers and scientists and everything can think they have a great technology, and a lot of times they do, and it's this really great technology that can provide a benefit. But when you get down to it, if that technology isn't going to, first and foremost, benefit the patient, but realistically, if it's not going to make money as a business, it's not going to succeed. So I think that is something that people need to understand, and it's not so straightforward. There's lots of technicalities in this industry around regulatory reimbursement that you need to really understand the nuances. You know, if we have a product that can save people's lives but isn't going to make any money or isn't going to save any doctors' time or anything like that, then it's going to find it hard to get into the market.
Yeah, it's a sustainability bit. I think people sort of see that it's they find it very difficult to deal with that commercial aspect that actually has to make a return for it to be able to be applied. So for the good to make it into healthcare, it actually needs to be sustainable. And I think people sometimes find it hard to reconcile with that, but it is a reality of the way that the society works. And I think it's a good thing because it helps us actually deliver these outcomes to patients, but it needs to be, I guess, a big part of what you do when you're trying to commercialize things rather than just focusing on the technical, I think.
Yeah.
I think all the accelerator programs try to help bring that to the fore, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess maybe just to wrap up, looking ahead, what are the next goals for Neuroflux? What are your personal goals? Obviously, you want to finish your PhD, I imagine. But what about the company? What about your technology? Where do you want to go with that?
Yeah, so immediate goals for my PhD are definitely getting that completed by the end of the year. In terms of Neuroflux, I mentioned earlier we opened up our pre-seed round, so we're trying to raise a bunch of money to fund the next stage of our journey. So that's a big focus for us at the moment. And then with Neuroflux after that is running this clinical trial with the Jules Institute is going to be really crucial for us. But ultimately, long term, we really want to commercialize this device and get it into hospitals in Australia and worldwide to improve stroke patient outcome.
That's fantastic, Sam. It was really, really good to get a bit more into what you and Neuroflux are all about. Obviously, we'll be seeing a lot more of each other in the near future. Thanks for your time today. And thanks, everyone, for listening and watching.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, mate.